Kitty's face is telling me no. Her body. Her body is telling me no.
I knew that was coming.
Welcome to the Four Corners Crime Cast. My name is Jake.
My name is Rory.
And I'm your host, Katie. And today we are talking about the Watts family murders.
Ooh, that'll really get us in the Christmas spirit.
And where did you do your research on this one, Katie?
So the book for this one was My Daddy is a Hero by Lena Durley. And a lot of the information from that book was taken from Letters from Christopher by Sherilyn Cadle. And his confession transcripts I found were transcribed by crimelights.com. And the 2,000 pages of discovery files were accessed on Denver Post's website.
How many of those did you read?
I got through like 600 of them.
Wow. 600 pages of files?
Yes. And then I couldn't do it anymore.
Well, that's understandable.
And where are we in, so it was the Denver Post, so we're in Colorado for this one?
Yes, this is Fredericks, Colorado.
Fredericks, Colorado. Now, this is a fairly recent case, correct?
2018, yeah.
Ooh, this was after they legalized the herb, quite a bit after.
So with a case this recent, has everything gone through with trial and everything?
Yeah, he took a plea, so there actually was no trial.
Weak. Of course he did.
Well, give it away now, Rory.
We'll get into it, but it was actually Shanann's family's decision more so than his, because he wanted to avoid trial so they didn't have to go through the trial and the appeals and all of that.
So I noticed that on the outline here it says, Chris piece of shit Watts. Mm-hmm. But then right here it says, ass garbage Chris. Mm-hmm. Which one are we going to go with?
Either.
Either?
I hate no one else in this world more than I hate Chris Watts.
What about Chris Twats?
That's fine. You can literally call him whatever you want. If you're in prison with him, you can literally shank him to death. I don't care.
Just Chris make it
as painful as humanly possible.
Or just explain to him how to kill himself.
Yeah, people did that to him.
Yeah, that's later in the episode.
But
so
what I think they should do is let him live out his life sentence. And when he's on his deathbed, he should be tortured to death.
Spoiler alert. Oh, yeah.
So I think, actually, instead of that, why not just torture him to death?
Because right then he has to spend, 70 years in prison?
So that's, its own torture? I mean, you can just...
Yeah.
I think we should give him as long as he can live in Gen Pop. Fuck it.
I don't know. Just man in the iron mask him. Make him wear a mask all the time. Scream at him that he's ugly. Beat him with a hose and stuff.
He's literally the worst, most vile person ever.
He is an ass garbage and a piece of shit.
Yes, and much more than that.
Before we even get into it, I guess we can just say, fuck this guy.
Oh yeah, fuck this guy.
Awesome.
All right, Katie, start us off on this one.
Shanann Watts was born January 10th, 1984, in New Jersey to Frank and Sandy...
Ruschek.
Ruschek. I don't know why looking at it fucks me up.
Ruschek.
A few years after Shanann's brother, Frank Jr., was born, they moved to North Carolina. Shanann made friends everywhere she went and was incredibly popular during high school. She was always extremely well organized, to the extent most people referred to her as OCD. There really isn't much information out there about her childhood, but she grew up in an extremely loving home and was close with her brother and her parents. She married her high school sweetheart in 2002, but he was too controlling and the marriage ended quickly.
Why is it that people can't just be a little bit organized without being labeled as OCD?
Because people have to quantify the differences in other people in order to gain understanding of themselves. So if they're less organized than someone, they're organized to the point of a mental illness.
Well, along the same line of thought, why can't someone just be a little bit messy without being called a slob? A fat slob.
Are you talking about me calling you a fat slob all the time, or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Christopher Watts was born May 16th, 1985, in Spring Lake, North Carolina, to Ronnie and Cindy Watts. He also grew up in a loving home, but reports that his parents were not one to openly discuss their feelings or problems. Played sports, starting from the time he was five, including baseball, football, and basketball. He was the closest with his father, who often took him to NASCAR races and coached his little league teams. Chris was extremely shy throughout his high school years and often described as socially awkward. He was still able to make friends and stayed close with his best friend Mark his entire life. When Chris eventually moved out to go to school, his father was so upset with his being gone that he formed a heavy cocaine addiction.
I don't think that it was an ups. People usually don't turn to cocaine when they're upset. It's more like I'm ready to have a good time drug.
Sounds no. Yeah, it sounds like his dad was actually thrilled.
Does cocaine really like uplift your spirits?
No.
Oh. Shoots them down.
Why do you say that, like, you've never done cocaine before?
What I have is never cocaine? Once had a bottle with a hole in it that we put a straw into and snorted cocaine out of while we were driving. I have never.
Why does it always have to go to that extreme?
So his dad becomes a late in life addict of cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And where's his mother in this?
Thinking that her husband's having an affair because he can't explain where the money's going.
Ah.
But obviously.
Going up his nose hole.
Yeah. But eventually they figured it out and he got clean. After Shanann got divorced, she became incredibly sick. After many doctor visits, she was diagnosed with lupus, fibromyalgia, and endometriosis, creating the possibility she may never be able to have children.
Sounds like she might be entitled to legal compensation.
None of those are part of that.
I think so.
Okay, so what is endometriosis?
Basically, your uterine lining forms too much, and so you have really like heavy, painful periods. And
you slough a lot off of your uterine wall.
Yes.
Hmm.
Extra sloughage.
And it also can cause problems with an egg implanting, and so you are basically infertile.
Because your walls are extra thick?
Yes. No, because they're extra sloughy.
That's what it means. There's more skin to slough.
I don't think it's skin.
Well, so did you guys have sex ed in high school?
Yeah, for grade school, like a quarter.
Like, did they not talk about vaginas?
You should pay
vaginas?
More than that for sex ed class.
I mean, in sex, they did. That's why I know what a fallopian tube is.
What does it do?
It holds the eggs.
The eggs travel in the fallopian
tube. Oh, that's the ovary. They go through the fallopian tube to the uterus.
The only part of the video that everyone remembers because the word fallopian.
It's a good word. So it goes to the uterus, which is guarded by the cervix.
Then it goes to the butthole.
Which, where your egg comes down and it latches onto the wall to be spermed on. And once it's spermed on, the baby gets made and it poops out like a month later.
So the baby grows. The baby grows to the wall of the skin like it's a fucking thumb being grown on someone's belly. Like,
yeah, basically.
Just grafts on there. Like,
I mean, I did pass the class, but I'm pretty sure I slept through a lot of it too because it was early in the morning. But
interesting.
I'm sexually educated. All right, Katie, continue on. I'm sorry, that went way off the rails.
The two met in 2010 when Chris's cousin's ex-wife convinced Chris to send Shanann a Facebook friend request. In one of the more popular videos used by media outlets, Shanann describes meeting Chris when she was at her absolute worst. She said when she received the friend request, she said, quote, "What the heck, I'm never going to meet him." They eventually began talking and went on their first date, but Shanann originally pushed Chris away and said she wasn't interested.
She should have stuck with her primary thoughts on this the whole time. Never going to meet him and then push him away.
So is Facebook partially to blame for this?
Facebook's to blame for everything.
I think the only one to blame in this is Chris.
And Mark Zuckerberg.
You're probably correct.
He continued to pursue her, and they ended up beginning a relationship. Shanann said she knew Chris was a keeper after he sorted all of her medications into a pill box for her and even went with her to a colonoscopy.
Do you think she told all of her friends that he went to, like, he's a keeper because he went with me to my colonoscopy appointment? It just seems like a strange thing to be like, that was her selling point on him.
Does persistence really work that way? Like, when you're
creeping in a bush?
When you're trying to have a relationship with someone, the persistence angle is attractive to women, because I just kind of find, like, if someone's not interested in me, I lose interest in them very quickly.
I think it depends on the situation. So, like, for her, she was pushing him away because she was really sick and at, like, a really terrible point in her life, and not so much that she, like, legitimately was like, I'm not interested and I never want to have anything to do with you. I think it was more of a, like, there's too much shit going on with me right now. I don't want someone else in my life. And he just continued to be there for her, not so much like texting her at 4 a.m. saying, do you want
to
fuck?
I think she just wanted someone to hold her hand at the colonoscopy appointment.
He wasn't in the room.
You're not going to convince me of that.
Okay.
This guy just seems like a little creeper. He's like, ain't no doctor going to be doing that to my girlfriend.
Well, I think the whole idea was that he was not creepy and just a really average, normal guy.
I think he hid his creepiness is what I'm saying. I'm accusing him of being a creeper in the bushes.
You can't really hide your creepiness if you're asking the doctor, ooh, let me see the insides of my girlfriend's butt.
I think the colonoscopy thing...
I think we're hung up on that.
It was the fact that it's incredibly personal. That's not something that a woman generally will invite a man to, and a man generally will say no to joining a woman they just met to. Shanann constantly gushed over Chris, telling everyone he was perfect, the best thing that ever happened to her, and saying that she couldn't have found a better man. Chris proposed in 2011, and they planned their wedding for November 2012.
Ooh, that's when the world was supposed to end, wasn't it? Oh, is that December? That was December 21st, 2012. They planned their wedding right before the world was supposed to end. They didn't believe in the Mayans, I guess.
After Y2K, I don't think anyone really did. Chris's parents had never liked Shanann, usually describing her as controlling. They would often say that Chris constantly was doing things for her and getting nothing in return. Right before their wedding, Chris had a major fight with his family and told them he didn't need them anymore. They did not attend the wedding, which likely hurt their relationship with Shanann more. After their marriage, Chris and Shanann moved to Frederick, Colorado, just outside of Denver. They had visited friends and fallen in love, while also agreeing it would be good to get away from the family drama. They built their home together, a two-story, five-bed, four-and-a-half-bath, in a peaceful suburb. Once they were settled, Shanann began fertility treatment in hopes of having a child.
You got to when you just built a five-bedroom, four-and-a-half-bath house.
Yeah, it's a big home.
Yeah, it was a nice house.
Gotta fill it up with choblins.
They were successful, and Bella Marie Watts was born December 17th, 2013. They continued the fertility treatments after she was born, and Shanann was pregnant with their second daughter, Celeste, known as Cece, who was born July 17th, 2015.
Pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
So she went from being possibly infertile to having a couple kids. Pretty quick.
Good for her.
Yeah, I mean, fertility treatment. Along with Shanann's numerous health problems, the girls both had medical issues. Cece had a severe, life-threatening nut allergy, asthma, and acid reflux. Both girls had tubes in their ears and their adenoids removed and took daily medications. In 2015, with the overwhelming healthcare costs for Shanann and the girls, they were forced to file for bankruptcy. They claimed $448,000 in debt. At the time, they were both working in a Ford dealership, but with the girls being born and the money problems, they found new jobs. Chris became a technician for Anadarko Petroleum, and Shanann became a salesperson for an MLM company called Lavelle, selling Thrive products for weight loss.
Thrive was that thing that was, well, it probably still is big, I just haven't seen it, but it's that thing that was like a drink or something, right?
They had like every morning drinks and patches and all kinds of stuff. Shanann was extremely successful, with Chris saying she could sell you the clothes on your back and you wouldn't even know it. Chris was helpful for her sales, and he used the products and lost a significant amount of weight. In June of 2018, Shanann learned that she was pregnant with her third child, Nico Lee Watts. Neither had expected to be able to conceive naturally, so the pregnancy was a shock. There's a video that is pretty popular in documentaries and on news sites of Shanann revealing the pregnancy to Chris. Comes home, and she's wearing a shirt that says, oops, we did it again.
Aha, Britney Spears play there on words.
Timely.
Chris seems the opposite of excited, more so forcing his happiness at the news. He also looks at the tests and asks if the pink means it's a girl, as he wanted a boy, which is what convinced them to try for another child.
I think I've seen that video.
Yeah, it's really... He just walks in and he's like, hey, I like your shirt. And then he stands there and he's like, oh, really?
Wait, what does that mean?
So, how did they know it was a boy?
Because wasn't pink.
That is, okay. So, first off, that's not how pregnancy tests work. And second off, they went to an ultrasound, and they were told.
Okay, so the kid was fairly far along, because don't you have to pee something like...
Doesn't develop a pee-pee till quite a ways in.
Yeah, like 18 weeks or something? 20 weeks?
Well, I mean, nowadays, like 2018, we have some pretty... So, in 2018, like I was saying, ultrasounds are like high def. You can do 4D ultrasounds now, so it's pretty easy to tell the sex of your baby early on. You don't have to wait as long as you used to.
Especially if they weren't already
prodded. They can also do genetic testing on the baby as early as like 4 weeks, I think.
Okay. Well, I just I didn't know that it was that early. I don't know. I'm
they
trying
don't even
to get
have their eyes open at 4 weeks.
I'm trying to get the time frame on.
She was 15 weeks pregnant when she was killed.
Okay, so that's okay.
That's wait a third of the way or so, a little bit more than a third of the way.
So there's another video, which is the worst one in my opinion, and it's of Bella. Shanann's recording her as she sings. Rory, read it. I can't read it.
My daddy is a hero. He helps me grow up strong. He helps me read books. He ties my shoes. You're a hero through and through. My daddy, daddy, I love you.
That's a really good song for a four-year-old.
She was four, and she didn't know her dad was going to end up murdering her.
Chris is described by everyone, including Shanann, as the perfect father. Before this happened, no one ever spoke a bad word about him. He was loving, caring, and did everything possible to take care of the girls and Shanann, which is what makes this case so difficult. There was absolutely zero red flags, nothing that would have allowed Shanann to realize she may be in danger and that she needed to get out of the relationship. Sometime in June, Chris met a woman that recently began working for his company named Nikki Kessinger. As they saw each other every day, their conversations turned from small talk to flirting. They began texting each other every day, and eventually an affair began.
What a piece of shit.
Nikki with two Ks is definitely a homewrecker.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
she didn't know. At first, he told her that they were just at the end of their divorce, and that they had no kids, and that Shanann was not pregnant.
So he's a liar. Like,
she had no idea until all of the news stories broke that Shanann and the girls were missing, that
he was a suspect and everything.
Any of this. Yeah, she went to his house and saw the pictures, and she even told him, she was like, I don't know why you're throwing your entire family away. Like, you need to really think about this before we go any further. Okay. So
not a homewrecker?
No.
Not well, that's intentional homewrecker.
Not be painted in a bad light because she went through some shit because of this. Chris and Shanann went to San Diego on a Thrive business trip and returned home on June 26. During the entire trip, Chris was texting Nikki, but Shanann had no idea. She had noticed that he was deleting text messages, but assumed she had nothing to worry about, as their relationship was picture perfect. 12 hours after they got back from California, Shanann, Bella, and Cece flew to North Carolina to spend 6 weeks with her and Chris's families. The plan was for Shanann to go alone for 5 weeks, as Chris had to work, then he would join them for the sixth. By this time, Shanann was 9 weeks pregnant. Chris and Nikki's affair got exceptionally intense while Shanann was away. The two went on dates and trips together, and Chris would often spend the night at Nikki's home. Because he was spending so much time with her, Chris often ignored Shanann's calls and texts, and she began to notice something was off. She tried almost constantly to get Chris to talk, but he refused, saying that it was something in his head. He also told Shanann that he no longer wanted the child she was carrying. Things got worse when what they called Nutgate occurred.
What a terrible name.
That's a really bad name. But what was that?
So, while Shanann and the girls were at Chris's parents' home, she noticed that Cindy, who was Chris's mother, had given all the children ice cream with peanuts in it.
What?
Cindy had always seen Cece's allergy as Shanann overreacting and did not consider it as serious as it was.
Okay, boomer.
So what happened? Did she have a bad allergic reaction?
Or? She didn't eat any of it, so she was okay. There wasn't, like, since it was ice cream, there wasn't any dust or anything. So she didn't have any reaction, but she easily could have.
So the kid was smarter than her grandmother.
Of course, Shanann got incredibly angry, going as far as accusing Cindy of trying to kill Cece. She took the children and left, calling Chris and telling him that he needed to talk to his parents and tell them he didn't appreciate what they did. He did call them, but told them not to worry about it, as he was planning on leaving Shanann anyways. Cindy and Ronnie did not attend Cece's birthday party or even call her a few days later, which upset Shanann even more.
So he told them, like, I'm leaving her, don't fucking worry about it. And they were just like, okay, cool. Cool, son. Way to be an outstanding human being.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's just a weird thing.
Chris flew to North Carolina on July 31st. That night, Shanann got extremely sick, vomiting all of the night and suffering from a migraine. Police later searched Chris's Google history and found that he had searched 80 milligrams of oxycodone will... He admitted in later confessions that he had given Shanann the oxy in hopes of causing a miscarriage.
That's absolutely nauseating.
Yeah. As someone that has been through that...
Rory took one of those one time and was asleep for 3 days and puking for the first one or two.
Yeah, I felt like I had overdosed. And it's just
you
not,
had.
Yeah, it's not fun.
That's fucked up.
He says that he thought it would be easier to separate from her and be with Nikki if Shanann was not pregnant.
What the fuck?
I mean, that's such a crazy thing. And this is just out of nowhere. He just decides that this is the correct course of action.
Yeah, he was like, well, I don't want the baby and I want to be with Nikki, so.
He should have just killed himself.
I mean.
Yeah.
Kill yourself, Chris Twats.
So he doesn't actually present any signs even later on of any mental disruption or anything?
No.
Okay.
Like, literally, he had these two moments, and that was it. The last week of the trip was the worst for Shanann, as Chris was now there but refused to touch her or speak to her. There are texts in the discovery files detailing how distraught Shanann was that her marriage was falling apart before her and how little Chris seemed to care. He did seem to come around a bit by the last few days, agreeing to go to Aspen on a couple's getaway that Shanann planned to hopefully fix whatever problems they were having.
So, why did he agree to do this if he knew he was trying to end it?
Because he knew he wasn't going to have to go. I mean, by this point, he was more than likely planning on what he did, so.
So we think that what he did was premeditated? It wasn't just like spur of the moment, like, fuck this.
There's no way that he didn't. I mean, he had to have thought about it because you don't know exactly where to put bodies like that in a split second. You don't get in your car and go, okay, this is where I'm going to go.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. As soon as they all got home in August, Shanann left for Scottsdale, Arizona for a Thrive business trip. She originally planned on canceling as she felt that Chris was coming around and didn't want more time apart to cause him to revert back to being distant again. He convinced her to go, and she was gone Saturday and Sunday, arriving home August 13th at around 1:45 in the morning. Shanann's flight had been delayed, so she was exhausted from traveling, being pregnant, and her other health issues. She got straight into bed and slept until around 4 a.m. when Chris woke her up. The two had sex, and afterwards began to talk about their marital problems. Chris describes it as a quote-unquote emotional conversation, with him telling her he wanted to separate and possibly that he was seeing someone else.
Sounds more like he was kind of emotionless in that conversation.
Yeah.
Something in Chris snapped after their talk when Shanann fell back asleep. He got up and went into each of his daughter's rooms and used a pillow to smother them. He then came back into the bedroom and got on top of Shanann, straddling her. He then wrapped his hands around her neck and strangled her to death. He says that she did not fight back at all, only laid there and stared at him as she slowly died. In his 2019 confession, where this information comes from, he says, quote, "Why couldn't I just let go? I just wish I could have let go." Strangely, in North Carolina, Shanann's mother says that she was woken up in a cold sweat around 4:30 a.m., right around the time Chris was killing Shanann. She was so overwhelmed by the feeling something was wrong with Shanann that she woke her husband up and told him.
Jesus, what the fuck?
Okay, this is a part I can't read, so.
Okay. As he began wrapping her body in the bedsheet, he heard a noise and looked at the door. Standing there were Bella and Cece, alive despite being smothered. They asked, "What's wrong with Mommy?" And Chris told them that she didn't feel good and needed to go to the hospital. He tried to carry her, but was unable to do so. So he drug her body down the stairs in front of the children. He backed his truck up to the garage, putting trash bags over Shanann's face and feet so the girls didn't have to see her. He laid her body on the floor of the truck and sat the girls on the bench seat, then made sure to go back inside for his lunch he had packed for work. He then drove to one of his work sites where the two oil tanks were located. He parked and tossed Shanann's body out of the truck onto the ground. He approached Cece and took her blanket from her, placing it over her face before strangling her to death. He carried her body to the top of one of the oil tanks and stuffed her through the 8-inch wide opening. When he went back to the truck, Bella asked him, "Daddy, is the same thing going to happen to me that happened to Cece?" He placed her blanket over her face and strangled her while she screamed, "Daddy, no." Her autopsy showed that she had bitten her tongue multiple times while being strangled. Chris then took her to the top of the second oil tank, having a harder time getting her through the opening because she was older and bigger than Cece. He said later he could tell one of the tanks had more oil in it because of the splashes their bodies made.
What the fuck? Fuck this guy.
Yeah, for real. Fuck this guy. That was rough.
That's just nuts that you could do that to your own kid. Kids.
Yeah.
Chris then dug a shallow grave and pushed Shanann face down into it. He quickly covered her up and went back to work like any other day. He sent Shanann's phone a text at 7:40, then asked if she took the kids anywhere to please let him know. At 8:15, he called Bella and Cece's school and told them the girls were being unenrolled, hoping that it would delay the time it would take anyone to notice they were missing. Chris then called their real estate agent and let her know that he and Shanann were going to be putting their home on the market and getting divorced.
Aren't these all, like, obviously, at the moment, maybe he thinks it's going to buy him a few minutes or whatever, but overall, isn't this just a bunch of shit to point the finger at him?
I think the way he thought about it was he was covering his tracks by saying they had gotten into a big fight, basically telling people that they had gotten into a row. He sent her a text worried about her and the kids, pretending he didn't know where they were.
Oh.
I think he's trying to set up some other situation here, but I think that's it. All these things he had planned to do because they had had this discussion last night. He texts her, sets up his little alibi thing or whatever, and away we go.
still not very watertight on the old alibi there.
No, I mean, it's obvious that this guy has had a plan about this. I mean, he unrolls the kids in school saying they're getting divorced. He calls the real estate agent saying they're selling the house. He's already texted to see if the kids are okay. He's talked to her mother. I think he's trying to set it up that maybe she did something.
Well, either way, no one's going to believe you, Chris Twats, you piece of shit, ass garbage man.
Yeah, he is a big old ass garbage piece of shit, man.
He took her wedding rings off her body, too, and left them on the dresser to make it look like she left on her own accord, basically.
Still no one's going to believe you.
So he then found the hotel Shanann had reserved a room for their upcoming getaway, and canceled the reservation. At 11:45, Nikki, Shanann's best friend, began to worry that she hadn't heard from her all morning, despite the fact she had an early OBGYN appointment to check on her pregnancy. She had her son drive her to the Watts home, where she noticed Shanann's shoes by the door in her car, with the girls' car seats in the garage. She called Chris first. He told her that Shanann had said she was going to a friend's house for the day, but not which friend. Nikki called the police for a welfare check after Chris refused to come home or show any concern for his missing wife and children.
See, this is the power of having people know your schedule, I guess.
Right as the officer was about to have to break into the home, Chris showed up. He let them inside, going from room to room, pretending to look for Shanann and the girls. A neighbor offered his security camera footage, which showed Chris backing his truck up and taking trips back and forth loading things, but it did not show what.
He had to be sweating, like just sweating, when the neighbor was like, oh, I've got security camera.
There's video of it. There's body cam footage of him. He's like all shifty and weird, but he's a good fucking liar. He does not really look, suspicious. He's acting weird, but it could be, like, seen as his wife and kids are missing and now the cops are involved. And
this is a fairly similar situation than what we had before, right?
With Susan Powell?
Susan Powell. This mm-hmm. is a fairly identical situation.
So is he a sociopath then, or?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he's
compulsive liar or just a really good liar?
There's probably lots of things he could be, but I think probably psychopathy is the best fit for him, but it's still really hard to tell because he doesn't fucking talk about it.
Piece of shit just rounds him out the best.
He basically, he gave his confession and that was as much as he's talked to anybody.
Huh.
But in his confession, you know, he's like, why did I do this? Why couldn't I have stopped myself? Those were my girls. Like, I did everything for them. All I ever wanted to be was a dad.
So he's just trying to convince himself now?
I guess.
Fuck this guy.
Yeah, fuck this guy.
When Chris left the home, the neighbor told the officer that Chris was, quote, not acting right at all. Around 6 p.m., Chris replied to a group email asking if he wanted to join a fantasy football league. He replied, I'm in.
Well, I mean, it is fantasy football. You gotta keep your priorities straight.
Yeah, apparently. On August 14th, Chris began giving media interviews. In them, he's pretty much void of any emotion and even smirks a couple times. He had his first FBI interview, at which he denied any involvement in the disappearances. When asked about the girls, he said, quote, Bella and Celeste are the light of my life. I'd do anything for those girls. Step in front of a bullet, stand in front of a train for those girls.
Bullshit.
Chris also denied having an affair, but by the 15th, Nikki had gone to the police to let them know that she was involved with him. She told agents that Chris had texted her the 13th and said, quote, my family is gone.
That's a pretty condemning text message right there, I'd say.
Situation kind of leads itself into him being the murderer.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious from the get-go, I think.
Chris also agreed to a polygraph and went in for the test the 15th. Obviously, it showed he was lying about everything. The officer administering the test even took time to thank Chris for being such a terrible liar, as it makes her job that much easier.
Well, you can thank this tack in my shoe, because I heard that it could help you pass a polygraph test.
She's just like, you're obviously lying, bro. Fucking come clean.
Basically.
But what if I was lying so intentionally that it's not a lie to throw you guys off my course, because I'm a genius.
But doesn't, I don't think, he can't be a psychopath, because I thought polygraphs didn't work on psychopaths, because it had a, they don't have the emotional response necessary, or the body indicators that.
I mean, with antisocial personality disorder, there's a list of things that you may have that are maybe symptoms or basically like how it shows itself, but you don't have to have every single one of them.
Okay. You should bust it's out like, the DSM-5 roar and find it.
It's right there.
Okay. Well, I just was.
It's like the, you know, in the hair psychopathy checklist where it's out of 20 and you only have to have like, well, it's hair? Technically out of 40. Yeah, it's the guy that created it.
Oh, I thought you were like, you, the doctor. If you got hair on your knees and your nuts.
No, H-A-R-E.
Oh, okay.
But it's like, you know, there's 20 questions and they're worth 3 points each. And if you only have to score like above a 40, I think.
Oh, that's that test that Rory always scores really high in, huh?
No, that's a different test. And I didn't score high enough to be a psychopath. Thank you.
But it's like that. So there's, you know, there's always things. Or it's like bipolar. It's like any mental disorder. You don't have to have every single symptom.
There are variations. So yeah. He could actually have like emotional responses to things, but in certain. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's also possible that she was just bullshitting him.
Okay.
Because she said that even on when you do a polygraph, there's obviously like they have to measure here where you sit at normally. So he had her like write down the number 3 and then went through and she was like, did I ask you to write the number 3? She had him lie and she said that it showed that he was even lying like a lot on that. Okay, basically.
So the baseline test showed that he was
a terrible liar.
Okay.
Right. But it's, like I said, entirely possible that she was bullshitting because she knew that's how you get someone to tell the truth.
She's like, you are the best, worst liar I've ever met.
Yeah, because if you...
Mr. Twats, I just want to hear some more of what you have to say.
If you did it and then you have written proof, basically, that you just lied about not doing it, then you're going to be like, oh shit, okay, well yeah, I did it. Chris asked to speak with his father, who had flown from North Carolina when Chris told him what was going on. In the interrogation room, Chris tells his dad in a low whisper that he does not want to protect her, meaning Shanann. He says that she had hurt the girls when they had their conversation about separating, and he had hurt her for what she'd done. Said when he saw Shanann on top of Cece, he, quote, freaked out and did the same thing to fucking her. While Chris was confessing and being arrested, officers were at the site where the bodies were, searching for any clues that may lead them to any evidence. They first flew a drone over the area, which showed a spot in the dirt where the ground had been freshly dug in a sheet matching the ones from Chris's home.
It's kind of cool that this is one of our most recent cases that we've done, and they have drones. Like this one, I think this is one of the first cases we've done where they use drone technology for this type of shit. It's kind of cool for what it is, for what it's worth.
They sent a photo of the site, and Chris marked with an S, C, and B where his family's bodies were placed. The officers that were tasked with getting into the oil tanks to remove Cece and Bella's bodies suffered severe emotional distress from the event. Their bodies were soaked in crude oil, and they had sat in it long enough their skin began slipping off their bodies when they were touched.
Fuck, that's gnarly.
What was his plan? Like, he didn't care. He's just leaving them there. Like, someone's going to find them eventually, right?
Maybe not. I mean, these are big oil tanks that really never get touched. They're out in the middle of nowhere.
Huh.
Like, everyone said that this is a site you don't want to go to because it's so far away from anything. So.
And, I mean, it's probably one of those things where they come and they fill up on oil. They are fucking put it into another barrel or something, load it up, take and put a filter or something on top of it and pump it out that way. It's not like they're going into the barrel and like looking around and saying, oh shit, there's a body in there.
And they might have just been storage. So like the less full one, they might have just went and put more oil in it and then...
On top of it, yeah.
Okay.
Chris was rather quickly charged with 5 counts of first degree murder, 3 counts of tampering with the deceased human body, and the unlawful termination of a pregnancy. The 2 extra first-degree murder counts were for the, quote, death of a child who had not yet attained 12 years of age, and the defendant was in a position of trust.
That's a super specific charge. That's not something they have everywhere, is it?
I doubt it. Detectives did not believe in any part of the story where Chris said that Shanann had killed the girls and knew that he was responsible for all 4 deaths. In October, after speaking it over with Shanann's family, Chris entered a plea deal. He would plead guilty to all charges to avoid the death penalty. Shanann's family strongly believed that despite his crimes, it was not their place to take his life. Chris specifically agreed to the deal so that he would not have to go to trial and spend his life appealing, which he believed would have a negative impact on Shanann's already distraught family.
Oh, what a hero.
Yeah, is he trying to get the hero side of this, or is he actually trying to be... I don't give him any credit for trying to be a decent person at this point, so it's got to be something else.
He was saving his own ass. I mean, he...
Well, by this time, he had found God, and...
Jesus.
You know, repented,
fuck.
And...
You know, I hate when they use Jesus as a cop-out like this. It's so annoying to me.
I killed my wife and... 3 children, but I get to go to heaven now because God said I'm forgiven.
I basically, the only reason he found God was because he went to prison. He had nothing better to do but find a way to get eternal forgiveness or whatever bullshit he wants to believe.
He's a martyr. He didn't want to go to trial for her family, and He found God because he felt bad and wanted to repent his sins because he did something terrible, but, you know, you can find forgiveness in God because he forgives everybody. After hearing extremely emotional victim statements, the judge sentenced Christopher Watts to 5 consecutive life without the possibility of parole sentences, along with 48 years for Nico's death and 36 years for the tampering of deceased human body charges.
That's a long time. So they gave him 5 life sentences, right? 5 consecutive, so that's 25 years each?
99. Life without possibility of parole is 99.
All right. So that's 495 years, plus 48 years, plus 36. So he got like 600 years. God, I wish that we could find him the Ark. What was the fucking cup that Indiana Jones was looking for?
The Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail. I wish we could find the Holy Grail and let him drink out of it so he could live that entire 600 years.
No, because then he won't die.
Yeah, well, we can kill him at the end of 600 years.
How?
However you want. The worst possible way that we have in 600 years.
Huh. Laser decapitation.
You know what we
particle disintegration.
What we should do is we should, like, if he drinks out of the Holy Grail, that way he's, like, immortal, basically, but then we should light him on fire. So he literally just burns almost to death for the next 600 years.
And then you put him in a transporter. You could transport him to the Bermuda Triangle. We'll never find him.
He was moved from Colorado to Wisconsin in December 2018 over security concerns, as his case had become well known with inmates, and they were constantly yelling at Chris in his cell, explaining the best way for him to kill himself.
I love it. I would love to be able to hear what some of those inmates were saying to him.
They're probably pretty fucking creative. They've got a lot of time to sit around and think fucking insults.
Nothing but time, like. And it's not going to be like your run of the mill, like, yeah, tie your bed sheet around your neck and hang yourself from the bar. It's going to be
something fucking brutal.
Something really good.
Something from the mind of a prisoner who's been stuck in there a while and wants to see
in this solitary. Because he was in solitary because there's no way that he could go in Gen Pop without getting shanked to death immediately.
So he's in the SHU and all these fucking hardened ass criminals who are in there for doing terrible fucking things are telling him to kill himself.
They probably smash your head against that metal bed that you've got there.
I imagine they took shifts, and so it was a 24/7 thing.
Yeah.
So, like, 6 guys for 6 hours were yelling one thing, and then they just went on and on and on.
Tie your dick to your top bunk and jump out of it.
Chris's confession came early in 2019, and in December he was ordered to pay $6 million to Shanann's parents for her and the girls' deaths. Even though it's unlikely they'll ever get that money, the lawsuit guarantees Chris will never be able to profit from the murders.
Yeah, because 12 or 17 cents an hour is not going to pay $6 million back to this family.
No, they just don't want him to have anything.
Yeah, so he's not going to get paid for an interview. There's nothing that's going to. He's never going to get money for himself.
I love that. Every time he does do an interview, then Shanann's family is just sitting there with their hands out like, motherfucker, go back to your 12 cents an hour folding laundry and sniffing dirty whitey tighties from the laundry bin.
So that's going to wrap it up for Chris Watts.
Mm-hmm. Chris Twats, get it right, Roar.
All right, guys, we want to thank you for listening. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to contact us at fourcornerscrimecast@gmail.com. That's fourcornerscrimecast@gmail.com.
And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/fourcornerscrimecast and on Instagram at fourcornerscrimecast.
And as always, when you're just hanging out, you know, doing your Christmas thing in this next week, you got no work. You got no presents because nobody loves you. And you're just sitting there looking at your phone. Pull up your podcasting app. Listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play.
We don't need a list. Yeah.
It's Google Podcasts.
I don't tell you how to do your part.
No.
Google Podcasts. Just give us a look. Give us a listen. And if you've got any ideas, send them our way, and we will send you guys a sticker.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Adios, motherfuckers.
All right, Katie. Let's kick off the old trail for this story.
Do you want to try that again?